You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Welcome to Strange Familiars. Allison?
Yes?
How was your day today?
You sound very interested.
I threw you off there.
Yeah. So, my day was fine.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
On tonight's show.
Yes?
I will be talking with Rod, who was on the show before. Great storyteller. And he has started his own podcast called Lodge Tales.
That's a great name.
Where he talks to just other First Nations people. He told me he was going to do it, and I was like, this is a fantastic idea. It's a fantastic idea. Because I'm lucky that Rod talks to me and tells me these stories. I'm lucky when other First Nations people tell me the stories. But I think in many cases, they'll be more comfortable talking with him, you know? So,
yeah.
So let's get these stories down, you know? I think it's a great thing. Before we get to my talk with Rod, I would like to thank our patrons. Thank you so much, patrons. Thank you for everything you do. We could not and would not make Strange Familiars without your help. If you like what we do and you'd like to support what we do and get extra content besides, you can become a patron at Patreon. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. All of our patrons get full extra episodes of Strange Familiars. We just released one earlier in the week, The Unbinding Ramble. Where Allison, John, and I talked about The Unbinding, but really talked about 50 other things. The Unbinding was sort of the basis for the conversation.
It's not an ASMR movie.
It is not.
It's not the unboxing.
We do at least one full extra episode a month for our patrons. Sometimes we do more. Patrons also get commercial-free versions of the weekly shows. So if you don't like those commercials, that's one way to stop it. Become a patron. It's patreon.com/strangefamiliars. There's also a program on Apple Podcast. It's called Patron of the Strange there. Apple Podcast subscribers also get the commercial-free weekly shows and the extra episodes monthly as well. And once again, I'd like to thank all of our patrons. No matter where you're helping us out, it's a huge help. All right, let me get to my talk with Rod. In the second part, I ask Rod's opinion on whatever I saw over there at Fishing Creek, the little Albatwitch thing. At the point I talked to him, the episode wasn't released yet, so I kind of go over a lot of the details. I know you guys just heard it last week, but it's just a short part, you know, where I kind of retread what happened so I could describe to Rod, because at that point, the episode hadn't been out yet. Let's go ahead and get to Rod from Lodge Tales. I'd like to welcome Rod back to Strange Familiars. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, thanks.
Yeah, well, thanks for coming back. You were on, originally, on episode 349, we did a show called Talking Owls, and 350, Little People, Bigfoot, and Other Spirits, and then you were back again on 363 and 364, sharing a lot of stories from Blackfoot culture and from your own experiences. And since that time, you started a podcast called Lodge Tales. What's that about?
It's just a place where, like, natives can share their stories, just indigenous people in general, and, you know, their paranormal experiences. Anything from, you know, spirits to UFOs, Bigfoot, you know, cryptids, stuff like that. But these ain't just personal stories. Sometimes they're family stories that go back from a long time ago that describe certain few things as well. You know, spirits, cryptids, and stuff from in their family, their stories that they have. I wanted to create a place because natives ain't really comfortable sharing their stories with outsiders.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And we're more so comfortable sharing with, you know, if not from your own tribe, then just other natives in general. You know, it's easier to talk to them because they understand too, kind of on the same wavelength as the rest of the tribes are. So I wanted to create a place like that because I searched far and wide for podcasts with that kind of had that, and I didn't really see any. I mean, they are out there, but there's really not a lot of them. I mean, off the top of my head, I can think of one, and I can't even remember the name of it. But there's one other group that does something similar to what I do, but it's a YouTube channel. And I don't even know if they have a podcast, but yeah, so I just wanted to do something like that. You know, because I really liked your show. I got all the inspiration from your show.
Oh, thank you. You mentioned that idea to me. I said, man, this is a fantastic idea because of that. Because I know I'm lucky when natives come to me and they want to share their stories. I know how lucky I am because it's like, okay, you're trusting me with this. I completely understand. And I completely understand the hesitance to share with people outside of the culture and stuff. So when you said you were going to do that, I said, man, I think it's a fantastic idea. I think it's really good. So when you talk to people, have you talked to people in U.S. and Canada?
Just in the U.S. so far. The people from Canada, I initially said that because our tribe's also in Canada as well.
Okay.
But no, mainly from my tribe, my family, and I have some people from Alaska that came on the show too, some Alaskan natives. They have some really interesting stories. Yeah, for the most part, it was just us Blackfeet and there's few people that are on the back burner that are kind of like got cold feet yet about it, but mm-hmm. You know, from different tribes. But yeah, I've reached out to a lot, and there's a lot of people kind of just waiting, and sooner or later I'll get a call from them, you know.
So where can people find Lodge Tales?
There's LodgeTales.com where you can listen to the free episodes, and then the members only are on Patreon, and it's the same handle. It's just Lodge Tales. Spotify, Audible. You know, YouTube, it gets kicked over to YouTube as well. Red Circle, of course, it's on there.
Awesome. I will put links in the show notes so everybody can find you. Well, I was hoping, since I had you on, you might have some favorite stories you've heard, you know, since starting the podcast.
Yeah, there are some really good stories that I've heard so far. Some that are just scary beyond belief, you know. So the first one that always pops into my mind, my cousin, she lives at the house that I grew up in, and when we were living there later in life after my grandfather had passed away, there was a bundle in that house, And that bundle was an otter bundle. And it was in our family for a while. As the elders passed away, it kind of ended up with my grandpa. And of course, he could sing Crazy Dog songs. He was a Crazy Dog singer and stuff like that. And he was involved a lot with the old ways, but he never opened it. He never did anything like that with it. It was just with him. But he wasn't actively using it or anything like that. But when that bundle was in that house, nothing could bother us in that house. Like, no spirits could come in there that were bad or anything like that. We're always well protected because of that thing. I mean, just one story that comes to mind. I don't know if I said this one before. Her cousin's husband, my wife's cousin's husband, it's kind of a mouthful. He had passed away because of insulin. An insulin issue went wrong with him. And something happened with that, but he ended up passing away. Well, one night he came to that house, and I could hear him outside. We were sleeping. It's so quiet out there. I could hear him, you know, hey, Rod. And I sat up, like, what the heck? Okay, let me in. And I knew that voice. I said, oh, man. You know, and I said his name. I said, I can't let you in. You can't come in here. So, oh, come on, Rod, just let me in. I said, look, man. You died, man. You're dead. You can't come in here. And he kind of got frustrated. He was in the front of the house, and he came to the side of the house, to the window, and he got, like, grew really big. And he got frustrated, like, to get to the top of that window. So, geez, that's about 9 feet, maybe? He grew about that tall. I could see his shadow.
Wow.
From the outside light. And he just grew that big and didn't say anything else and just disappeared just like that. Just grew big, and then the shadow just dissipated. He was gone. But my wife was right there in the bed with me, and she was scared. She didn't say a thing. She heard it all.
Oh, she heard it too. Wow.
Yeah, and because he came, and he was also around that house where he passed. He was also there, asking them to let him in because how he passed wasn't good. He was actually drunk, and he took too much insulin. He didn't know. He thought he didn't take his shot, but he did, and then he double dosed.
Mm.
And that, on top of being really drunk, that's what made him, you know, pass away. So he had a sweat for him. I didn't attend. I had to come back down this way where I live at now. We were going to community college at the time, so I had to go back to the school. I didn't get to attend. So anyways, that house right there, this is where the story happened that just sticks in my mind. So one night, she was sleeping. My cousin was sleeping in her room, which happens to be the room that we used to sleep in. And she was in that room sleeping. The bundle had got removed from the house. It's actually being taken care of now by one of my cousins. And so anyways, she's sleeping one night, and her younger sister's out. But they're all of age, you know. And she's out one night, but she's late coming back home. Anyways, at one point in the night, she wakes up. My cousin that's home, she wakes up. And when she does, her sister's sitting in the room, like, got a chair that she had in her room pulled up kind of close to the bed and was just staring at her. And she needs glasses and contacts to see and everything like that. So she's looking back at her, and, like, she sits up and notices her, and she's like, what? What are you doing? And she didn't say nothing. And so she's, like, getting closer to her to try and get a better look at her. And she says, you're freaking me out. Like, what's wrong? Is something wrong? Are you okay? And she's trying to get a good look at her. The lights ain't on, and it's dark in there. But she gets a pretty good look at her face. And when she does, her sister smiles at her. But the smile doesn't stop until it hits up by her eyes. Mm. It's like this huge, just creepy smile. And she's kind of freaked out. She's like, what's wrong with you? Are you okay? She just keeps saying that. And her sister gets up and walks around that chair and walks out the door. But as she's watching her walk out, her body's moved forward, but her head doesn't leave the position of staring at her.
Oh.
Yeah, so her head's just totally backwards as she walks out the door. And as she walks out the door, she could hear her rummaging around in that towel closet that's right next to her door in the hallway. She's kind of rummaging around in there, and she hears her walking to the living room, but she won't leave her room. She's, you know, petrified at this point. And this is the oddest thing. Like, I know from your podcast, you think so too, that how do you go back to sleep after something like that?
Right, right.
She does.
Wow.
She, like, lays there disturbed for a while and then eventually falls back to sleep. And so that next morning she wakes up and her sister's laying on the couch sleeping. And she starts waking her up. She's like, "You were acting really weird last night. Like, what was wrong with you? Why were you sitting in my room just staring at me?" I was like, "What? No. When I got home last night, I just laid straight on the couch and went to sleep. I didn't go in your room." She's like, "What?" Like, "No, I came right to sleep on the couch. I wasn't even in your room." And so she proceeds to tell her what happened, what she's seen. And they were kind of creeped out. And her sister says, "Well, look, when I got dropped off up by the road, and this walk is about, from the road to the house is about 200, 250 yards, kind of down this dirt road over to the house from the paved road, the highway. And there's an old garbage can up there, like a dumpster where they just put their trash and it comes and gets dumped. And she's walking by that. And from the corner of the dumpster, she sees a coyote. And she's passing by. She says, "Oh, it's just a coyote. I ain't going to worry about it. It ain't nothing. I'm just going to keep going." But she's kind of wary of it, right? So she's like looking at the garbage can and just making sure it doesn't do anything to her. And as she gets on the other side of the garbage can, and she's still watching that garbage can, it peeks around that side at her. And she sees it smile like a human. Mm. And its smile goes all the way up. Really big, just the way her sister described that thing smiling at her.
Wow.
And it kind of creeped her out. She didn't really know what to do. She still had that 250-yard walk ahead of her, but she makes it home and just goes to sleep on the couch.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was... just knowing that house and where it happened at, for me, kind of hit on a different level. Yeah, I'm like, "Oh my God, I wouldn't know what to do," because I always felt protected there.
Yeah.
I didn't have anything like that coming to the house. That would have really, you know, upset me too.
Heck yeah. Do you have any, like, coyote folklore in your culture? Like, you know, do they represent anything?
Yeah, they do. So, see, that one there, we would just classify that as a bad spirit in general. It was a bad spirit
okay.
of some kind. But the coyotes have a really strong association with the little people. You know, the little people travel as coyotes when they need to go far distances. And for whatever reason, they shapeshift into those. That's how they travel. Mm-hmm. There's an old story about them singing a song. They sing this song, and once they're done singing it, they transform, shapeshift into these coyotes, and they travel like that. Yeah, so that was one of the... That story is the story of the Crazy Dog Society. It's one of our old warrior societies that we still have today, but of course we don't war anymore, so these societies have changed mm-hmm. into, like, helping people, praying for people, stuff like that. But that society was given to us by those little people. So, yeah, coyotes are that. They're really tied closely with those little people. That's kind of the significance of them, I guess I would say. But our trickster isn't the coyote. The trickster is actually a man.
Oh, really?
Yeah, we call him Old Man. That's what it means in English. Mm-hmm. But his name is Nopi. And Nopi was our trickster. In our way, he was an exact, how would I say it, a lookalike of the creator. He looked like the creator. That's why we called him the Old Man. Because he looked like the creator. And that's how... When he was sent here, in our creation stories and stuff, that's how they say Natusi sent Napi here to teach people to live with the earth again, because we forgot. And he taught it. He sent them down to have us learn how, I guess, the art of living. And that's what he was here for. But he stayed here so long. You know, he didn't die. He was here thousands of years. He didn't die. And he went to... what's crazy is he's went to every tribe. You know, he was a trickster. Some places he went, he'd be like a raven or a coyote, and, you know, all these different things, but they all have a trickster in their origin stories of some sort. They have one, and that's the same guy that when he was hanging around us, he decided to look like the creator.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's how we recognize that guy. But yeah, Trickster was a man.
I know you, when you were on the main show, you explained the Otter Bundle before, but it's been long enough and there might be new listeners. So what exactly is that when you said there was an Otter Bundle in the house?
Well, the Otter Bundle, in any bundle, it's like this. Let's see. I can use this as an example. We have one called a Beaver Bundle, too, and I can use that for an example. So in the Beaver Bundle, when it was first given to us by the spirits of that animal, he's the one that kind of orchestrated the transfer of those rites, the teachings of those songs to us, that spirit. When he did, he called on all the other animal spirits and made a treaty with us. His thinking at the time was that if we don't make this treaty with man, they're going to wipe us out. And the reason why, long story short, is that there was a couple that moved away from the tribe. They didn't like how the other men were hitting on that girl, that she was pretty and she was beautiful, and they kept making passes at her, so they wanted to be alone. As they stayed alone, he had to move further and further out to hunt. And there was a beaver there, a beaver pond there, and they noticed, those beavers noticed that she was getting lonely for him. So he decided to take her and bring her with his people. Like, he did medicine on her that she could eat what they eat and go underwater for a long time. And she kind of like lived with them. Well, when the guy came back, he was sad. And that beaver knew that it made a mistake. The spirit knew it made a mistake. So to right that wrong, he taught this man all of these things and gave him this bundle. But what's in those bundles is, depending on which one it is, there are sacred objects that allow us to, how would I say it? I guess the only way I can say it to a non-native person is there are sacred objects in there that are capable of performing miracles.
Okay.
I guess that's how I would say it. And so when the people get these bundles, the right to these, their spirit is transformed. I'm no longer Rod, I'm no longer Tim. I am that plus this, you know, and it's transformed so that that life force that's in that bundle can flow through you. If not, you can be harmed. It can actually kill you. So to have that much, power, I guess, mm-hmm. we say life force go through you, you have to have the rights for that. And so you're transformed too. And also, a bit of your spirit goes into that bundle and stays there. You're like linked to it. And so from the very first beaver bundle we've ever had to the ones that have been expanded, like I think today there are 8 beaver bundles. But from the very beginning, well, they expand so that they can help more people. The tribe has gotten bigger.
Mm-hmm.
So they could help more people. That's why they recreate them, like multiply them, so more people can benefit from them. Well, from the very first person and all the people that have ever held that bundle before they transferred it to somebody else that was worthy of it, a part of their spirit remains in that bundle. So the person today, if you went to one of them and you asked them to pray for you, not only are they praying for you, but every last animal spirit that's in that bundle and every last bundle holder is directing its life force through you to these people. And so that's how a lot of times people are healed or they're given better luck, you know, the ability to change their lives, is because all of this life force is coming from them and it's being directed at your spirit to improve it, to transform your spirit into a healthier version of you. That's just how, like, the prayers work. That's what happens when you pray.
Yeah, sure.
Directing life force or something, you know, and it changes that person's spirit. When your spirit changes, your physical body follows that. So you can improve your life and stuff. And this is what bundles are in general. Each bundle's got a different purpose. Like, so for a beaver bundle, I mean, each one have their own protocols. So, like, with a beaver bundle, you can't, So you go, we just call him like a beaver man, right? That's the beaver bundle holder. We call him beaver man or beaver woman. Mm-hmm. Now, you can't knock on their doors. It's like the old way. You got to be quiet. You know, you have to kind of stand out there and wait until they notice you, then they'll let you in. They have so many different protocols like that. Say you were part of the blacktail, you know, society or bundles or anything, that blacktail medicine, the deer. Well, if you're part of that, you of course can't eat deer. You can't shoot them anymore. You can't do anything like that with them. And like say you had some sort of bear medicine. Well, you can only use that medicine in the summers. You can't use it in the winter when they're sleeping.
Ah, okay.
You know, yeah. It won't work. You'll piss them off. Mm. So you can't do it like that. And these spirits that we're talking about, they're helpers of the creator, like any other spirit that helps him. They're just a type of helper. And so all the work that he wants done will happen through them. And they'll be out doing things for you. Now there's all kinds of bundles, not just animal spirits. There's also elemental bundles, like the thunder bundle. You know, there are things like that too. But long story short, and in a nutshell, they're sacred objects that bless our people. And they have helped us survive and persevere through a lot of hardship throughout the tribe's history.
So to have one in your house, I guess, is kind of a major thing.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, really loosely, I would say you could compare it to the Ark of the Covenant or something to that effect.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was kind of like, just, you know, me being Catholic, I'm just kind of associating it with kind of with saint relics, you know, having this like really important thing that you don't own, you're a caretaker of for a time until it goes elsewhere.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of how it is. I'll tell you one more interesting thing. That first beaver bundle that they had, so animals gave to it, right? They'll give something to it at that time, and like a hide or feathers or stuff like that. That's what those animals gave to it. And what's really interesting about that is there's a woolly mammoth tusk in that original bundle.
Oh, wow.
So this had to have been really old.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's wild. So I'm wondering, too, about the story you told about the fellow who was passed who came around and asked to be let in. Now, I think if I knew someone was passed, I would just automatically say, no, I'm not letting you in. But do you have specific teachings that say, no, don't let spirits in there asking to be let in?
Well, yeah. Any time a spirit's asking to be let in is a time of caution, right? Because the good ones don't. They don't need to ask to come in. They can just be around you, the good ones. They have no reason to harm you. We think they're always around us, those good ones. So we don't have to worry about them. It's the ones that are asking to be let in that are suspect, you know?
Yeah.
And especially if someone's just passed, we know they didn't make that journey over yet. And in our way, you're not supposed to stay here. You have to go over first. You have to make that journey. Because that goes back to the story of Napi. He stayed away from the Creator for so long that he started doing misdeeds. So we learned that the longer you're away from that side, the more bad you become. So that's why we always pray for them to come over. Now, once they've gone over, they can come back and check on you just fine. You know, we've had a lot of stories of relatives doing that, checking in on you, coming back and telling you that they're okay, things like that. Even pets. Yeah, even pets do that. But they have to first make the journey over before it's okay for them to come back in good ways, you know. Because if not, then they're going to be bad, whatever they are. Or you can trap them here too, and that'll create something bad. That's why you don't mourn for so long. We're allowed to mourn 1 year. That's it. You know, and then you got to let it all go.
That's fascinating. That's really fascinating. There's an old folk song called The Unquiet Grave, and they mention mourning for a year and a day, and their tears are keeping the ghost of the person they're mourning for comes back and says, hey, you got to let me go because your tears are keeping me awake. You know, it's been a year and a day. You got to let it go.
Wow.
Yeah, that's really fascinating.
I'll talk about this next one. So here's this holy man back home. He's just call him a Sundance man, because he used to run the Sundance, for one of the Sundances, for quite a while. I think he just transferred his bundle off last year. So one night he was sitting in his house. They have the same thing, a dumpster by their main road and a dirt road to the house. So his dogs start barking. They're just barking and barking, going crazy out there, and he's wondering what's going on. So he goes out, and he takes his rifle, and he goes out, and he's looking around, and the direction the dogs are barking at is toward that garbage can over that way, toward the road. And he sees this thing, this figure over there, and as he's looking at it, his dogs are just going nuts, and he actually sees it because it's coming closer, going toward his house. And when he looks at it, what he sees, imagine, I don't know if you've ever seen videos or in real life of water snakes when they're in those big balls under the water.
No, I'm not sure.
Thrashing, thriving ball of snakes all together.
Oh, wow.
That's what he seen, but it was shaped like a man. But it was all snakes, all of it. And once he seen that, he told his dogs to go back in the house, and he wouldn't let his dogs out. And he stood there, and that thing came running towards his house, and when it would get so close, it would just bounce off, go flying all the way back over by that dumpster. And he stood there and he watched it for a while. It'd get up and it'd run back and it'd bounce off again, because he had protection, or he had barriers around his house. They couldn't bother him. And it just kept doing that. And finally he started talking to it. He says, "You have no power here." He says, "What are you doing? You're making a fool of yourself. You know, you can't do anything here to me." And it just would keep doing that, keep trying to run, and it would just bounce off its barriers. And finally, he just walked back in, left it to do whatever it wanted, but it couldn't bother him. Mm-hmm. That's like a really bad spirit. I don't know what that is. Snake man? I don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not sure what that was. I never heard if it ever came back again or what, but these medicine people, they're out there and they're like, "I've never seen anything paranormal. I want to." Like, well, you better be careful what you ask for.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, these things come in all different shapes and sizes, and you might not like what you see. You know, you might not like it one bit. And so that kind of curtails into this next story. My wife's cousin, he used to live behind the local IGA in Browning, Montana. That's on the Blackfeet Ridge where I'm from. And there's some apartments back there. Well, he would go out and he would throw his stuff away. There's trash cans in the back, and the trash company would come down the alley and dump those garbage cans. But they had like gates to dump their stuff back there. Well, he would go back to dump his stuff, and he was always getting mad because all of the, you know, the dogs were dumping over all those garbage cans and getting into them, sniffing around for something to eat. He was getting frustrated by that because it just kept happening. So one day, it was actually at night, more toward late evening, you know, just starting the night, he heard those garbage cans getting knocked over again. So he snuck out there. He was going to catch those dogs and see which ones they were and chase them off and try to scare them. Well, when he looks down that alley, because they already got knocked over where he's at, and so he's looking to the west down the alley, and what he's seen was this thing. So it was a snake on the bottom half of it, just like this big snake, but its top half was a human, and it was up on the fence, like slithering along the top of the little skinny fence, the wood fence on top of it. And it would open one of those lids. It would look in there like it was looking for something to eat. And if it didn't find anything in there, it would just knock that whole garbage can over. It would slither along again and open the next one and do the same thing all the way down that alley. And I guess you could call that a snake man too. But what he told me was, he said, "I firmly believe that spirits are hungry. Some of them can be hungry." Why else was it doing that?
Yeah, no, that's super fascinating.
About it.
Yeah.
them. Because, you know, we give out spirit plates, stuff like that. We feed them. But, yeah, that's the first time I've ever heard of a spirit actually looking for something to eat.
We hear that enough about Bigfoot, you know, people going through people's trash and stuff. I mean, you know, the more time goes on, the more I'm leaning towards Bigfoot being some kind of spirit. And, you know, it's kind of doing that same thing that you're talking about. You know, it seems like it wants to eat when it's here, you know, whatever that means.
We think it's both a spirit and physical.
Interesting.
We think it can be both. You know, like, well, just like you and I, there's a physical you and I, and then there's a ghost over there.
Yeah.
You know, same as that. But the other part is a lot of us really suspect that these things are, how would I say it, there's some sort of spiritual awareness to these things. Like they have medicine of their own. This one man actually had medicine from them. You know, when you go out, you fast, and the spirits will come. If it's meant for you to have their gifts, they'll give them to you when you approach it in a certain way. And we call that fasting. There's a way to do that. And so he was actually given medicine by them, Bigfoot medicine, he could use to heal people. One interesting story about that whole spirituality and Bigfoot thing is one of my friends is a cop, and his brother was married to a lady from another tribe down south. I want to say it was, is it Shoshone or Arapaho? Maybe Shoshone Bannock. Yeah, Shoban. And they're from Idaho, that south of us. And so he was at one of their sweat lodges, and he was participating in one with them. And as they were sitting in there, they heard this thing walk up to the sweat lodge, and it ripped those, like just a window open in those sweat lodge covers. It just tore them back and opened it. And what they saw was this caveman-looking thing, like a really odd-looking human. And he was looking in there, and he was mocking them, and he was, you know, running them down. Like, what are you guys doing in here? You just don't mean nothing. What do you guys think you're trying to prove with all of this, you know, like that, like,
wow,
making them feel like nothing. And they were all scared, and the man leading the sweat, he just puts his head down and he starts praying, and is asking his, you know, for help. He's asking his helpers to come and intervene, using the spirit world to fight against the spirit world. And so that's what he was doing. And what they all heard after this was these huge footsteps. And that thing standing there the whole time, peeking in that lodge, just running them down, this bad spirit, just running them down like that. And they hear these footsteps, doo, 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 doo. And they see this big, giant, hairy thing. They see Bigfoot grabs this bad spirit and, like, hugs it. And it reaches over and it shuts that sweat lodge cover back up with its hand. And that whole time, that thing's just screaming, let me go, let me go. What are you doing? Let me go, let me go. And they hear it just walk off, doo, 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 doo. Same with that voice of that thing. Let me go, let me go. It just fades away.
Wow.
And they were able to continue to sweat. And that was, whoever was leading that sweat, that was his power, his helpers, was them.
Man.
And so there's so many stories about things similar to that that happen in these ceremonies and stuff like that. Like one of these Sundances they were at, one of those Bigfoot showed up, those nowhere people, they showed up, and it was scaring people because, well, how they look and how they sound, screaming like a woman, and they were afraid. They were getting afraid of it, but they were having a Sundance at the time. It was at one of the nights that they were there. I think it was the first night, and the old man that had medicine from Bigfoot told a young guy, he was about 16, he was just learning all the ways. He says, I know what that is. He says, that's just those nowhere people. That's just that Bigfoot. He says, it'll scare these people, so take this smudge and just walk around the whole camp with that smudge and pray hard. Ask it to take pity on us and just pray hard. Go around the whole camp and come back to me. And the guy that did it's actually my friend, and he was scared. He was so scared. But he walked around that whole thing. He says, man, I just did what the old man told me. And I prayed as hard as I could, and I walked around that whole camp. And I just did what he said, and I came back to him. And it didn't show up the whole rest of the time we were there, but he was there. He was there with us.
Wow. Did he see it leave, or did it just disappear?
No. No, he didn't. He said once he lit that smudge, they didn't even hear it anymore.
Okay.
He lit it and he walked around there and he was praying. They didn't even hear it anymore. Like it just disappeared. You know, it was gone. I heard this story from another person in my wife's family, this next one. So they were all sitting around, and their grandpa, when he was really young, he was listening to a story, and he was listening to the elders speak, and they said there was a time that the Blackfeet, they went into this place, we call them the Sweetgrass Hills, and there's a cave in one of those hills where they're almost like mini mountains. They're really big, but it's a place people are going fast. Anyways, there was a cave in there, as the story goes, and this is the story I heard first, that when they crawled in there, they had to do it on their bellies, and they came into this open area, and they seen the skeleton of a giant, and it was clutching a medicine bundle. It was clutching one like that, like hugging it, but it was dead up against the wall, sitting there dead, just a skeleton. They seen that. They didn't bother, of course, and they left out of there. Mm. Well, when I was asking one of the guys in my wife's family about that, hey, can you tell me that story about that, you know, that giant that they found in the Sweetgrass Hills? He says, hey, he says, that's not the story I heard. He says, I was sitting right there when he told that story. And what he said was clutching that bundle was the lower people. He says, there was a Bigfoot doing that. He says, it wasn't a giant. It was Bigfoot. He was holding that bundle.
Wow.
Yes. So there's something to that, see, because in the old ways, that's who used to protect us when we'd go out and fast. They would clear out enemies, or they'd clear out, you know, bear, mountain lion, wolf, whatever's around there that would possibly get at you. They would chase them off so you could fast in peace and be safe. Because you go out there helpless. You don't take weapons, nothing, just a robe. You know, back in the day, it was like a flint knife that you could use to spark a little fire so you could light your pipe and pray with that, smoke that tobacco. And that was it. You had no water or food for 4 days and four nights. The fourth night you come out. But that's how long you sit out there. You just pray, you know. So they're the ones that used to help us with that. They protect us in our tribe. Mm-hmm. Each tribe has a different relationship with it, but that's what it used to do for our tribe.
Wow. So this would have gone back ancient, like you would have known about the Nowhere People or the Bigfoot or whatever, like your tribe would have known about them forever.
Yeah. They're so old that they predate us even moving into this area, our tribes moving into this area. They were here before that. So, I mean, who knows when, because our stories go all the way back, let's see. The oldest stories go back before the water days, before all the glaciers came down and receded back up. You know, when they receded back up, there was a lot of water around here. Mm-hmm. Our stories go back to before that.
Wow.
So they go back really long, and they were here already. They were here before our stories, you know, kind of started, you know, like, not the creation stories, but our old stories. They were here since before those times that we were in these areas of, like, you know, Montana, where we're at today. Because tribes moved around. They moved to different places, you know? Mm-hmm. But you were here before that. Because there's like this really, really old story that might turn a lot of heads, I guess I would say, because that person I was talking about, Napi, that being that the Creator sent down to teach people to live according to him with nature and everything in balance, there's a story of when he led the people off of this continent of North America and they migrated out of here, like somewhere overseas somewhere. They migrated off somewhere far. And he eventually led the migration back. So when they got back here, that's when the people that didn't migrate with him, they turned savage. Like they were, you know, cannibalizing one another. Mm-hmm. There was no form of like community or laws or anything. They were like wild animals. And when he came back, he had to teach them how to live again, those people too. And I highly suspect this might be them, the lower people. It might be them, but I have no idea. And that's way far back to our creation stories. They might be that old.
Right. Wow. Your recall for stories is so awesome. Is this like a special interest of yours, or like this, say I was just walking down the road in your area and I ran into somebody, would he have as many stories for me if he was willing to talk to me? I mean, like, you know,
the average native can go on all night, you know, I'm talking just an average. I'm not talking, because there are those that don't have any, have never seen a spirit in their life, but they've heard stories, so they could tell you stories they've heard for a long time. And sometimes we do this on TikTok. I'll get on with some of my other native friends and we just tell stories all night. And people that are in the TikTok lives, they're just like salivating out of the mouth, you know, more, one more. We'll go to like 3 a.m. sometimes,
wow.
You know?
Wow. Oh,
just,
man. That's so awesome.
Swapping stories back and forth. And they all have a lot too. Like, you know, and people love that. The natives that joined the line, and there's non-natives, they're just like, oh my god, what did I walk into? Wow. You know, because we can just go back and forth. One person will tell a story and they get done, and the other one's like, hey, that reminds me of this, and it just feeds upon each other all night.
Oh, that's fantastic.
And they're just random stories that we all tell.
I mean, that's why, like, one of the reasons I was excited when you started Lodge Tales, I'm like, okay, so this will be sort of a document of these stories. But it sounds like, I mean, I guess handing them down to each other has been a thing anyway, you know?
Yeah, yeah. It has. But we're just now bringing it out to the world, you know?
Yeah.
For more people to hear these or to engage with us even. You know, we're bringing it out there and kind of letting people know what we can share.
Sure.
Is not everything we can share.
I understand. But. Yeah. Man, that's awesome.
And it's really fun to do too, you know, because God, you hear so many things. This next tirade, I guess, I want to get into is, so here's this thing back home. I've heard it called a lot of things. I've heard it called he who shall not be named. I've heard it called Goat Man. I've heard it called a lot of things. See, because the Goat Man can appear as this giant goat, like so big that it'll be laying on its belly. Say it was in your house, it'd be laying on its belly, but its horns would be scraping the ceiling. It could be that big. It could be a half man and a half goat, or it can just be a straight up human. You know, in our stories, the eyewitness accounts seen it as a man, but it had hoofs and a tail sticking out of its trench coat. Now, what I'm going to describe is a common theme of all the stories we've heard about this thing. It's got a cowboy hat on, and it wears a trench coat, very well-spoken, good-looking, and wants to buy drugs or alcohol for anybody that'll have them. And some people call it the devil. But this thing is back on our res. And so let me start off by just saying, even the police have seen this. Even the police have caught this on camera. The convenience stores have.
Oh, wow.
So there's a lot. There's a lot of, oh God. So, all right, my friend, he's a cop. It was one night where there was like a prom or something going on, and they would park by the town pump. It's a gas station convenience store. They would park there because that's where people would buy their alcohol. Well, I don't remember what was going on. Homecoming, something was going on that night. So that's where they would park to make sure, you know, people don't get rowdy where they're there picking up their stuff. And so one night this night that they were doing that, he had one of his friends in with him. And he said, hey, pull up to that back window on that side. I know that guy that works in there. He says, I'm going to put on this. He had a really wicked mask, like a devil mask, Halloween mask. He says, I'm going to put this on and I'm going to go peek in that window at him and scare him. And he says, all right. So they park in the back. He runs out. He does it real quick. Scares his friend and is running back to the police car, and they head out. And a little while later, they cruised around for a little bit, and they went and did it again. And, you know, same thing, just kind of cruised around, like laid low from that place for a little bit, but they were checking on it here and there, driving by it. And all of a sudden, this call comes in. There's a motor vehicle accident just outside of town. And so they go flying out there to respond. And by the time they get there, there's already like a lot of people there already, like the highway patrol's there. Other cops are there. So when they show up, ambulances are getting there and stuff like that. And they say, hey, go back to that, to town pump and see if you see this description. If you can find video proof that that car was at town pump. And he says, okay. He says, yeah, because that guy that just left here, you know, in the ambulance, by the time they were done talking and just milling over everything, ambulance had left. They said that guy was asking about that person that was in with him, but we can't find any, well, bodies around here. We've kind of, you know, been looking here, you know, just read out in here and stuff, and we don't see anything obvious, so... You know, just go and make sure he's not talking crazies, because we don't want to, you know, it's a busy night. We don't want to be all spread out through here. It's, all right. So they go back, and my friend talks to the clerk, and he says, hey, do you guys got video footage of this from the past hour or whatever it was? And he said, yeah. And he says, well, can you go through it and get me the footage where this vehicle, and he described it and stuff to him. He says, oh, yeah, okay, I'll look for it. He says, well, I tell you what, while I'm looking for it, you guys don't have to hang around here. I'll just give you a call and you can come back. So he said, all right, give them their number. And they kind of go out and, you know, making sure the town was still okay. He said he only took like 2 spins through town. It's not a very big town, so it must have not took him very long. But he comes back, gets a call, and he comes back. And he says, yeah, we found that car. He was here. But before I show you that, I need to show you something else. And there's cameras that are on top of the convenience store that face down toward the gas pumps, and they're kind of around the building. And so the first one he shows him, the first clip he shows him, it's of him and his friend. They're getting out and they're scaring this guy and they're running back. He says, but that's not it. He says, now let me switch to this top camera and I'll watch this. And he's showing him from the top camera as his friend ran in and scared that guy. There was that guy on top of town pump by that camera. He was looking down. He had that cowboy hat on and that duster, and he was looking down. And as his friend went and scared him, you could see that man kind of put his head back and laugh.
Hmm.
And seeing, you know, the camera switches to the front to when that guy walks in. And right before that, that man was on that side, and he was watching all of these cars just drive by, you know, just watching them all, watching as they drive by. Then all of a sudden, as that car comes in, he gets really interested in that one car, and he's just watching it. And it pulls into that gas. It parks at the gas buzzer, and the guy gets out, and he walks in to pay for his gas and get his beer and stuff like that. As he did that, as he went into the store, that man steps off of that roof and like floats toward his car. about halfway through the parking lot, coming off of that building, it turns into this green orb, this green light, and it floats to the rear of his car and gets into the back door. They see the door open, that light float in, and the door closed.
Wow.
And the guy goes walking out with his beer, puts in his gas, and drives off. Well, on the way to the hospital from that wreck, he passed away. He didn't make it. And that's what they seen. And so he didn't know how to report that back to the higher patrol, but he did. He's like, that's what we seen. I don't know what to tell you.
Wow. So it was all on camera, that stuff?
Yeah.
Oh, man.
And that story is known around our tribe. Yeah. When I drive by there, I look up on there, man. I'm like, oh, my God.
Yeah,
that happened. And so he's had other encounters with this thing too. So one night he's driving and he's getting a call from dispatch, and they're saying, hey, there's a man on top of Snowshed. Snowshed is a hill, but the highway goes over it, and there's a bridge that goes over these train tracks. So that's what kind of goes over it. And that's Snowshed. There was a man jumping off the railings in front of cars. He says, you should go up there and look. People are almost wrecking, so go up and see what's going on up there. So he pulls up, and sure enough, he sees that same guy standing there. And he looks at my friend, and he just steps off of that rail and drops down to those tracks, and it's about like 30 feet down.
Hmm.
He's like, oh my God, I'm just witnessing a suicide, right? He says, oh geez. So there's a way to get down there on that Burlington Northern Road. He takes his car, drives down there, and he's got his lights on, he's got his flashlight on, he's like looking for the guy. But when he gets down there, he didn't really have to look, because he sees that man standing by this pillar, but he's got his leg up on one of those rails, and he's just kind of smoking a cigarette. And my friend gets out, and he identifies himself. He's like, what are you doing down here? Like, what's going on? What are you, who are you? Things like that. And that man just looks at him. And when he looks at him, the same thing. Okay, this is what he told me. He says, have you seen that movie Smile? There's a new movie that came out called Smile. And that's the only way I can describe how that thing looked at me. He said, there's a movie now that's out. And that's how he looked at me. He smiled just like that. And when he smiled, he said, I got freaked out. But the word he uses, and I don't know why, is he says it slithered. He slithered around that pillar.
Hmm.
He said, so I went looking for him with my flashlight. He says, I was looking, I had my hand on my pistol and stuff, but I was just looking. I couldn't find the guy. He just totally disappeared down there. He was gone.
Hmm.
Just gone. And he said, another time we ran into this thing, he said, we were doing security. This wasn't when he was a cop. He says, we were doing security for... They were building or renovating these houses, and so they would park kind of away from the houses, and they'd watch down at these houses. But it was near Snowshed, that same place. It's like just off the hill and down toward those houses. There's a road out there where you could kind of pull out and pull away from this little border patrol housing that was there. You could pull it kind of basically behind their houses and look down at this other subdivision, and that's where they were sitting. And as they were sitting there, one of his friends was there, and he kind of heard the stuff on the radio, and they go over closer to him. And when they get there, they see this guy all bloody. He's just sitting there, like, telling them something, and the cops finally show up, and my friend's listening to him talk to the cop, like, hey, what happened? What's going on? What happened here? And he said, I just left this house party. And where he lives is across these railroad tracks, kind of far. And you have to kind of go down into this kind of creepy coulee. And he didn't want to do that. So he started walking the railroad tracks out to his place. And he's just walking. He's got himself a drink still. And he's just sipping on it while he's walking. And he sees that man with that cowboy hat and that trench coat. He's sitting on those railroad tracks. And he's got a rope. And he's kind of like roping his boot, just playing around with that rope. He said, so I didn't think nothing. I just said, hey, how's it going? He says, I'm good. And he just keeps walking. And that guy gets up and he kind of comes up behind him. And he says, hey, can I walk with you? I said, oh, yeah, sure. So where are you going? He said, I'm just going home. I live right over there. A place called Femaville, that's what we call it. So I'm walking over to Femaville. And he says, yeah, I'll walk with you. And then all of a sudden, that guy starts kicking his foot from behind. I'm just kicking him. He starts getting annoyed. He's like, hey, quit, man. He's like, what are you doing? And he said, when he turned around and looked at him, he says, what are you doing? Why are you doing that? Like, what's your deal, man? He said, I just want to tie you up and cut you.
Oh, man.
And it freaked him out. So
I guess so.
All of a sudden, that guy pulls out a knife. And they start wrestling around and wrestling. And, you know, eventually, I mean, he remembers hitting the ground really hard. And when he got up to get away from him, he started running, but not toward his house. He ran the way he was coming, like back toward town, because that's just how they landed. And he was just trying to get away.
Yeah.
So he was just running and running from this thing. And he says every now and again, he'd feel this warm sensation on his back. But he just kept running for all he was worth. And he said he'd seen some security sitting there. And so he just ran to them. And that's when those security guys are like, yeah, you just start pounding on our window. You know, and we opened them and we called you guys. But we seen him all bloody. He says, yeah, that's what happened. That man with that cowboy hat trench coat, he chased me and he was cutting me.
Oh, his so he actually got cut
up. Yeah, his back was all cut up by that thing.
Oh, man.
But that's that same thing that they describe. And, you know, there's so many stories of it. And another one is when there used to be this bar called the War Bonnet. He walked in there and, you know, nobody knows who he is. Nobody knows him. Even when they ask him his name, he's like, oh, you'll get to know me. You know, things like that. You'll never tell him his name. Like, he won't. But he goes in there and he's buying everybody drinks. Everybody likes him because he's doing that. And he just gets everybody drunk. He's just getting them more. And then he goes outside. And when he went outside, he had this old truck out there. And it was kind of snowy. And these guys that were out there smoking a cigarette, whatever, kind of visiting outside the bar, they see him. And say, hey, what are you doing, man? Where are you going? He's like, oh, I don't know. I'm just going to go to my truck. So they're going to take a ride around here. Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. I said, hey, I got a bottle. You guys want to drink some of it? I'm like, oh, yeah. Yeah, we'll take a couple shots with you. And so he gives them that bottle, and those guys are drinking it. And he just starts laughing. You know, he just starts laughing, and they're kind of getting weirded out by him. Like, well, what's wrong with you, man? Why do you keep laughing like that? And he says, it's my favorite time when you guys get drunk. Like, I really like it. And they're just looking at him like, what the hell? And a couple of the guys are like, hey, man, look at that bottle. And they looked at that bottle, and they were taking big shots. That bottle wasn't even emptying at all. It was still full. It wasn't empty. And so they're like, hey, man, here's your bottle back. We don't want no more, man. We're going inside. And they just gave it back to him. And he walked into his truck and left, drove away. And as they get into the bar, they're thinking about it. And they go back outside and, like, let's just see where, I don't know, let's just go back out there and see. But they go out there and all they see is boot prints up to about halfway to his truck, and then they turn into, like, they said, man, it looked like cow prints or like, oh, he said a split hoof print. That's what it had. And they're all around his truck where he was standing, where we were standing with him. It was all prints, like a split hoof print. Anyways, that thing is around and it goes all the way back to, they say the first time they seen it around our res was when alcohol first came. That's been around since. Wow. I mean, there's so many stories of that thing. So another one of Goat Man, this is where he looks like a half man and a half goat. So same guy, my friend that was a tribal cop for years and years there. One day, he says, we were driving around Browning. It was kind of a quiet night, he says. So I picked up one of my off-duty buddies. He called me, and he says, hey, I was getting an argument with my wife. He says, pick me up. I'll ride along with you for a while. I said, all right. So I picked him up, and he says, well, should we go out and check? It's called Durham Road. He says, "Should we go out and check Durham?" His people park out there and they'll drink and stuff. He says, "Yeah, let's go." And so they're driving out there. And it wasn't even long. And they're driving, is this part where this hill comes. You have to go up on this hill and then kind of over. Right there, they've seen this thing. About 7 feet tall, bottom part of a goat, top part of a man. And he said, when we seen it walk by, he says, it just took like 2 steps and it was across that road. And then 1 step and it was over that fence. He says, but one thing I remember the most about it was its eye. I said, why is that? He says, man, it was this big eye. And his eyes weren't in like the front of its head like how ours are. He says, it was on the side of its head. But it was really big. Just one big eye. And I could see the reflection of our lights and, you know, shine off its eye. Like that, that really creeps me out when I think about it. It just doesn't sit right with me to this day. And he said, so once it crossed in front of him, his buddy's like, what the hell is that? And he says, man, that's the goat, man. It's got to be. What else? What else? And he hit his camera, his dash cam, to start recording. And the good thing about that, he said, was that it records a minute prior to the event kicking off that you hit record on. It'll go back to a minute before that. Oh, okay. That.
Yeah, yeah.
And they catch it on camera.
Wow.
And so they fly back into the station and they get that thing out of there. They bring it into the computer and they're looking at it like, holy shit. They're all just staring at it. And everybody that was on duty that night seen it. They're looking at it. And he says, man, I said, well, what happened to the video? Do you still have it? He's like, man, we showed everybody that would look at it, that would care to hear our story. We showed everybody. He says, that old player that it was on, he says, I could get everything off of it from before that event and after that event. He says, but for some reason, it would glitch out every time I tried to download that event. Huh. It wouldn't come off of it. And that is really, really weird.
It is, but I'm not terribly surprised.
Right? And that's how it goes.
Yeah.
These things, I don't know why the hell... But he says, but we had it on there. We could play it back time and time again. He says, until one day, he says, we were playing and the thing just crashed and we lost it. You know, he says, but it was there for a long time. We didn't even use it. Well, what I understand is they didn't even use it anymore. They just left it in there. They had different ones they were using. Mm-hmm. So again, he's telling me, said, yeah, that was the second time I seen it. I said, what the hell? What was the first time you seen it then? And he says, all right. So he says, again, it was a quiet night in Browning. I'm just cruising around. He says, and dispatch calls us and said, there's this lady that called from Chinatown and she wants the horses removed from her porch and her front yard. He says, so there's nothing going on. So 3 of us responded and we're heading up there. He said, there was a guy ahead of me and a guy behind me. But we were kind of making our way over there. We were all spread out making our way up there. He says, and so I'm about halfway there. He says, and over the radio I hear, holy shit, it's the goat, man. He said, so I turn on my lights. He's like, my heart start racing. The blood was pumping. I turn on my lights and I go flying up there. He says, by the time I get to where the house was, he said, I seen it running down a road, and it makes a beeline down into that spooky coulee I was telling you about. It's called Depot Coulee, and it runs down into that. He says, and I see my friend, he's got one of those Broncos, and he's chasing it. He's, like, right behind it. And he said, so I jump in, and I go to the right of the coulee, and I'm hugging that side. He says, man, we're going, like, 70 cross-country at night, just boom, 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 boom. We're just cruising, chasing this thing. So then the third guy takes his time to go out and around to the left side of that coulee. So there's 3 of them all chasing it down this coulee. He says, and well, at the end of this coulee, there's this huge manhole, like a tunnel, like a huge culvert back there. I mean, I remember it as a kid. We used to walk in there and mess around, like explore it. It was way taller than us. It's like huge. It's like about 8 feet tall, maybe. I mean, I think you could even ride a horse through it. So as they're running their cars, they stop because they've seen it run into that tunnel. So all their lights are on it, and they get out, and they're like, oh, shit. And they're looking in there at it. He said, it's way in the back. He says, and it's kind of crouched down, like on a knee, and it's looking at them. And he said, Rod, he said, man, you hear stories about that thing, right? And I said, yeah. He says, well, it's a totally different thing, man, when it's sitting in there looking at you. He says, and it motioned with its hand. It was waving us to come in there. He said, and we're all standing there. He says, you know, us Indians, we like to joke around and mess with each other. And, you know, it's just their way of staying sane, too, on the job, on the beat. And
sure, yeah.
They start teasing each other, like, go ahead, go in there. No, fuck you go in there, man. he's like, why are we even here? Like, why did we even chase this thing? What are we doing? And they just get in and go. They're like, the hell with this. And they leave. They get out of there, you know. But he says, yeah, that was the first time. And he says, you know, I had a lot of trauma over that. He says, a lot of nightmares. He says, I lived with that for a long time. He says, I still get creeped out by that, just knowing that that thing's real. And all the stories you've heard, he says, are true. Mm. Yeah, those are some of the ones. I mean, I'm telling you, that frightens me when I think about it.
Yeah, yeah. Let me run something by you that happened to me just this past weekend. I just want to get your take on it and see if you might have anything to say about it as far as how you would interpret it. So we out taking a night hike with my buddies, and we were hearing some weird sounds and stuff, but not much happened. Towards the end of the night, it sounded like a fox coughing, and it sort of followed us along the creek, which was weird. It kept walking with us. You could hear it across the other side of the creek kind of coughing. I think it was a fox. I don't know. In any case, we get back to the car. My buddy gets in the car. He turns his headlights on, but I had to pee. So I went kind of to the right front of the car. And all of a sudden, well, I'm peeing, and I see this little face pop out, you know, looked like a little monkey face, maybe 3 feet tall. And it watched me pee. We locked eyes. It had little black beady eyes. We locked eyes. I guess he was watching me pee. I don't know. Didn't seem angry. Didn't seem upset. I said no because I didn't want it to come any closer. It was about 10 feet away. It was too close for my comfort. But I wasn't like super scared. I just like, no, like don't do anything kind of thing. I couldn't see its body. Like I don't know if it had hair or if its body was like black and it just blended in with the night or what. I can only see its face, but it looked like the face didn't float. It looked like it was attached to a head. It moved like that. And then it either ducked behind the tree or turned its head or something and just disappeared, just go on. So wonder if what your take on that would be.
I'm just hearing that. I would say you've seen one of those little Bigfoot, those small ones.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would think right off the bat is, yeah, that was a small Bigfoot, those little ones. Don't you guys have a name for them?
Yeah, we call them Albatwitch. That's the German name for them. They were here.
That's what I think you see.
Yeah, I mean, that was my first impression, but... Yeah, I didn't know if the peeing had anything to do with it or not.
I really do think you've seen them, but I'm not sure. Maybe it followed you guys.
Yeah, I don't know. The cough, if, like I said, if it was a fox, it was interesting because it walked right along with us for a good long way and kept making that sound.
Yeah, I would think you've seen that, like one of those little ones, because my wife's actually seen a little one, those little Bigfoot.
Oh, really?
Yeah, she was actually chased by it. It like was toying with her. Scared the hell out of her, but yeah, that really sounds eerily similar to what my wife describes.
Did she give a height on it? Because this thing was little. This is about, maybe about 3 feet tall, like little.
Yeah, the one she's seen was pretty small too. It was like about 4 feet or something. It was standing on a branch, and it was reaching up over its head, holding another branch, and it was like rocking this whole tree. She said she couldn't believe that it was doing that because the strength that it must have to rock that whole tree.
Yeah, yeah.
That's what caught her attention, the rustling of the leaves. And because she was just out picking peppermint and sweetgrass, and she looks up and she sees it in the tree. You know, it scares the hell out of her. And because she said when it looked at her, it's like how a cat's looking at something to play with. It's like, even nodding its head, like, to the side. And it was, like, pondering, should I or not?
Interesting.
You know? And
yeah.
She said, that's what made her afraid. She says, in my whole life, I've never felt like prey except that time.
Wow.
So I don't know why it had that effect on me, but it did. And so I just bolted. I just started running back to the house, and I just left my sweetgrass and my peppermint where I was picking it. I just left all of it, even my little rope that I was tying it to, everything. I just ran. She said, when I seen it and it was looking like that, and I started taking off, she says, it dropped. She says, like 25, 30 feet straight down. And I could hear it pacing me in those trees as I was running. So I got all the way up closer to the house, and she said, thank God those dogs come running out. My uncle's dogs come running out. And she said, they passed me. And I went straight to the house, but she said, my uncle is out there. What are those dogs barking at? He came out not too long after she made it to the house. What's going on with that? And she wouldn't tell him. I was like, I don't know. She said, oh, they're really after something, because they, whatever that was, they chased it for a while down that river, and then they came back. Like, they were, you know, scared, I imagine, because those dogs don't stop till they get whatever they're after, but they came back.
Hmm.
Whatever it was, they did chase it away for a certain amount of distance. Anyways, they came back to the house. She did actually come on my podcast to tell that story, by the way. I finally got her to do it. But yeah, you got to listen to her account of it. It's pretty intense.
Yeah, yeah. Did she describe the eyes by any chance?
I don't remember if she did or not in there.
Yeah.
But what you're talking about is how she, because we've talked about it before, but I don't remember in the podcast if she talked about it like that.
Mm-hmm.
But when I asked her, well, how did it look? She says that it just had like these black eyes.
Yeah.
And she said, and it was really creepy, because she's like, I don't know what I would call it, a human or an ape. I don't know. She says, but it looked like a human. But also look like it could be like ape-ish.
Yeah, that's just, yeah. I'm saying monkey because the size, but the face was like 50-50, maybe, you know? It was as much human looking as it was monkey looking, the face. But we locked eyes for sure, but it didn't react when I said no. I said no like maybe 5 times or something, and it didn't react at all. You know, I got progressively louder because I was just like, no, no, no. But it didn't care what I was saying. But it, you know, I guess I'm happy it went away. However, I don't know if it disappeared or crawled away. I don't know. But I couldn't see anybody. Not, I guess my only thought is it was just maybe all black and it just blended in with the night. But I saw its face real well. Like its face was just right there.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, I'll call it an albatwitch. I'm not sure, you know, it was whatever it was, little thing. I guess that's our local little people. I wish we had the Susquehannocks here, and they're just gone, man. And their legends are gone. Their language is gone. I wish I could have talked to them and heard their stories about it. We know they painted them on their shields because we have their war shields and they had them painted on that. But other than, we don't know what they called them. We don't know anything else. We don't know how they felt about them or anything. You know, I wish I could know somehow.
Oh, man, that would be great if you could get some local native lore on that.
Yeah, it's just so fractured on the East Coast, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, I mean, there some survive, but like, you know, the Susquehannocks were just killed off and kind of blended in with other tribes. I think there are some people who claim to have that heritage. I believe them. You know, I'm sure, you know, some existed, but you know, there's just the legends and the language is just gone, which is just, it's terrible. It's so sad. But well, where can people find Lodge Tales?
Yeah, you can find us at LodgeTales.com, Spotify, Audible, Apple Podcasts, Patreon, and Red Circle.
All right, man. I'll put the links in the show notes. Thanks so much for sharing your stories once again, and come back anytime, Ron.
All right, will do. Thanks, Tim.
This might be the oldest curiosity of the week we've had, perhaps.
It might be the oldest thing I've ever had to sell.
I feel like, well, somebody sent me a coin from the 1600s.
Yeah,
it was really cool. That had a wild man on it.
Yeah, we didn't sell it, though.
No, that's not for sale. That's for keeps. But I'm trying to think of anything else we had, like, older than that, even in the house.
I got a lot of 1840 stuff. That's when daguerreotypes pop in. But this predates it by, you know, almost 50 years.
So what have we here?
You have a book from 1796. I think it's cool just because it's from 1796.
Mm-hmm.
What's in it sort of incidental, right? Like, when do you get to touch something from 1796?
Yeah, like printed in the 1700s.
Yeah, it's I think it's a little book for students. It's the speaker or miscellaneous pieces selected from the best English writers and disposed under proper heads with a view to facilitate the improvement of youth in reading and speaking, to which, oh man, my eyesight, to which is prefixed an essay on elocution. And this is printed in London in 1796. I'm trying to think of all of the books that have yet to be written that will, and stories that will not be in here.
Yeah.
Even when I'm looking at the printing now, it's definitely old. Yeah, it has a bunch of like dialogues, descriptive pieces on sensibility. Dear sensibility, force inexhausted of all that's precious in our joys or costly in our sorrows, thou chainest the martyr down upon the bed of straw, and it is thou who lifted him up to heaven. Be sensible, Tim.
I'll do my best.
So lots of I almost swore. it's lots of beep like that. But the main thing, you're not really buying. I mean, I'm presuming if you're buying a book, you already know how to read. You don't need these essays. What you need is something from 1796.
Yeah.
This is just 20 years after the American Revolution.
Right.
Let's put that in a little perspective. Yeah. You're reading that, you probably lived through the Revolution.
Quite possibly.
Almost invariably. Whoever owned this initially, colonial, or maybe Georgian.
Maybe wore a powdered wig.
Yeah.
Maybe had a merkin.
It's all possible.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of possibilities here. None of that is residually in the book, though.
There's no wig powder?
No. Nothing from wigs of any sort.
Merkin glue?
Mm-mm.
I don't know if they... Did they tie them on? I don't know how they worked.
I feel that's another episode, perhaps.
Yes. And probably not of this podcast.
Mm-hmm. I don't know, though.
All right, that will be our curiosity of the week. I'll put a picture of that in the show notes. If you click on that, it should take you over to Etsy, where you can purchase that and other curiosities of the week, those that are left. Last week's curiosity flew off the shelf, Allison.
It wasn't even on a shelf.
Like a bullet.
Yeah.
So hopefully this one does
Do bullets fly off shelves?
Yeah, no, that was a bad, confused metaphor. But we're going to leave it in. I'm not even going to edit that out. Also at Etsy, artwork, originals, and prints. Hey, I restocked the Bigfoot Big Heart print, the Black Dog print, and the Mothman print. All were sold out. They're all back in stock now. So you can get prints of those once again at Etsy. Original art is there as well, including the artwork for this episode, assuming I complete it in time. At this point, it's not been completed, but I assume I will complete it in time. Copies of my books, some of my music's there. We've got Strange Familiars t-shirts, patches, and stickers there. Allison has a selection of antique photographs there in the Flowered Past section. We're temporarily sold out of paracord rosaries. I need to find time to make some. I will do that soon and restock them, but we have Petals and Thorns, Volume 1, my zine of Catholic ephemera, and A Little Bird Told Me, Volume 2, or Number 2, rather. Should be in stock very, very soon. As in, there's a box of them here on the floor. I just need to list them in the store. But first, they go out to Flowered Path Orchid Tier patrons. But after that, they will be in the shop. And Flowered Path t-shirts are there. All kinds of stuff over at our Etsy shop. That's another way to support us. Our shop name is Lost Grave. If you type in Strange Familiars at Etsy, though, you should see our stuff come up. Another place to go for Strange Familiars merch is strangefamiliars.com/merch. That's got photos of all of our different merch there. You click on that, it'll send you over to the Etsy shop, and you can purchase it that way. If you're not getting it from strangefamiliars.com/merch and or our Etsy shop, it's not Strange Familiars merch. It's pirated stuff, and it's not helping us out at all, and probably of very poor quality. I've seen some of these pirate shirts, and they are awful. Somebody showed me one. I was like, ugh, because they're not printing from my original artwork. They're printing from like JPEGs online and stuff, and it's just like the print quality is hideous. So don't do that. Don't support those people. All right, there was something else I wanted to talk about, and I forget what it is, and there was probably things I was supposed to promote for people, including myself, and I forget what those are as well.
So is Chad doing anything this weekend? Anything fun?
Maybe hanging out with me. Mm-hmm. That's as fun as it gets. But I don't know. I'm not sure.
Anything for Riverbend?
Well, Riverbend Comics is always at riverbendcomics.com. That's it. You're right. I was supposed to promote that. I'm glad you reminded me, Allison.
That was it?
That was it, because Riverbend is doing a Whatnot show with me to kind of launch our Whatnot shop. We're going to do a Whatnot show with Riverbend first. And that's going to be on May 10th at 7 p.m. It's going to be like maybe 1.5 to 2 hours.
Eastern time.
Eastern time, yes. We will be selling like the Mothman cover I did for Department of Truth. I'll be signing those. I might be doing some live drawing and selling those. We'll have my prints and books and stuff. It'll be sort of our introduction to Whatnot. What we're trying to do is like have everybody that follows Strange Familiars follow Riverbend, and maybe the people that follow Riverbend will come over to Strange Familiars. So we will start our Whatnot shows after that. But that's going to be sort of our introduction to Whatnot, and we're going to do a big show with John, and it'll be like a hangout. We're not just going to be selling. We can talk a bit. You know, you can come in and chat and so forth. So that will be on Whatnot. Again, that'll be under Riverbend Comics at Whatnot, May 10th at 7 p.m. Like I said, our plan is to go for like maybe 1.5 to 2 hours. If it's fun and, you know, we're hanging out and it's successful, then we might stay longer. But that's the plan right now. So hope to see everybody there. It's kind of like a live stream, but with an auction component, right?
Mm-hmm.
So should be a lot of fun. Thank you for reminding me of that. And thank you for listening, everybody. We will be back soon with another episode of Strange Familiars. Strange Familiars is a production of Dark Holler Arts. Intro and background music is by Stone Breath. If you want to hear more or purchase music, you can go to stonebreath.bandcamp.com. Strange Familiars is on Instagram, just Strange Familiars, no underscore, anything like that. Just at Strange Familiars. Give us a like and a follow and everything that you do on the Instagrams. And we're on Facebook, facebook.com/strangefamiliars. The Strange Familiars Gathering Group is there. You can always find us at strangefamiliars.com. Thank you.
Thank you.